Hello and welcome to IGEA Podcast. My name is Katharina and I'm from IGEA Bonn. Today we will have our first scientific interview. Our guest is Professor Dr. Lukas Menzel from the University of Heidelberg in Germany. There, Dr. Menzel lectures and researches about roles and the impact of climate change on water systems. In this interview, we'll learn how droughts affect Europe and if there's something we can do to weaken its impact. Professor Menzel, you are working as a professor for hydrogeography and climatology at the Geographical Institute of Heidelberg since 2009. A few of your main interests include hydrological and hydrometeorological issues with a focus on water scarcity, the influence of climate variability and climate change on the water balance. This is a wide range of topics, so how did you get there and what research projects are you currently working on?
Thank you, first of all, for this introduction. I first studied hydrology and physical geography. Later, I worked on a doctoral thesis about evapotranspiration. Evapotranspiration is an element of the water and energy balance, which was often unnoticed in climate impact studies, for example. Evapotranspiration is one of the main driving forces during the development of a drought. And it is an important element, especially when we consider water scarcity in dry environments. Let me add, after I received my PhD, when I was a postdoc at the Potsdam Institute for Climate Impact Research in Germany, I first worked on the other hydrological extreme, that is the occurrence of floods. I especially studied the possible future development of floods in a warmer environment. Currently, I am working on a project on droughts in southwestern Germany called DRYER. This project was launched in 2015 before we had the severe drought in 2018. At that time, we still had to convince our funding organization that drought is and will probably become an important extreme event, even in human environments. Nowadays, everyone is more aware that we have to deal with drought. Further, I am working in a semi-arid environment in northern Mongolia, where we study the impact of climate change on permafrost degradation and on water availability. I have also been working on water issues in the Middle East for many years. Here we study how climate change will lead to even higher frequencies of drought and associated water scarcity, and how the regional governments can prepare for such challenges, for example, through better transboundary cooperation.
It sounds you've went from one subject extreme to another subject extreme, and mainly worked in arid regions. So beside of the factor evapotranspiration, how would you describe a drought? Is there a general definition?
Okay, first of all, let me say that globally, drought is one of the most significant natural disasters in terms of spatial extent, duration, and long-term social, economic, and environmental impact. But drought cannot be defined in absolute terms. It is, first of all, an exceptional deviation of precipitation from the long-term average of a region. In this context, it doesn't matter if a region has a long-term mean annual precipitation of, say, 500 millimeters or 1,000 millimeter or even more. So in its simplest definition, drought just signifies a prolonged and abnormal moisture deficiency. Unlike floods, which usually occur quickly and abruptly, the development of a drought is a gradual process. So it is creeping. It comes very slowly. At first, it is hardly noticed. It is simply a phase of good weather. Then it increasingly develops into a problem that spreads from a rainfall deficit across a wide range of sectors and may eventually lead even to a social economic crisis. That means the full extent of the drought only becomes apparent when it is already too late to take preventive measures. In this context, the definition of a drought includes not only the physical aspects, such as low precipitation, high air temperatures, high solar radiation, and so on, but also the socio-economic context with special regard to resilience against drought, for example. So to characterize a drought, one can use different indices. These indices are generally valid. That means you can apply them in regions with different climatic conditions. It is important to know that droughts can also occur in regions that are naturally characterized by aridity, so where aridity is a natural phenomenon, for example, in semi-arid regions. So even in such dry regions, droughts can occur, so that it's even more dry in over some years or periods than on the average. There are, as I said before, there are some indices which can be used to define a drought. For example, the Palmer Drought Severity Index. It's a worldwide known index to calculate a drought based on meteorological indices such as air temperature and precipitation and soil water availability. So drought can be quantified as a standardized departure from mean conditions. But as I said before, the drought definition is more complex if you include socio-economic impacts. And in this sense, no general drought definition exists, I would say.
Is it possible to name a classic drought type for Europe? We have seen it in other countries where it's partly typical to just be affected by drought, but how is it in Europe?
First of all, there are different types of drought, such as meteorological drought, agricultural drought, hydrological drought, and socio-economic drought. I can explain them later if necessary. I'm not sure if we can highlight the dominance of a specific drought type for Europe, because a typical drought usually includes all the types mentioned. So it's a full drought includes both meteorological, agricultural, hydrological, and socio-economic drought. But of course, different countries have different vulnerabilities. For example, heavily agricultural countries will suffer particularly from an agricultural drought. That is, there is not sufficient soil moisture available for a sufficient biomass production or agricultural production. Or when a country strongly relies on electricity production, for example, from water power, it could have a problem with its supply of electricity during a drought. Of course, the extent to which a country has prepared itself for droughts, for example, through artificial water reservoirs or dams, but also equipping fields with irrigation technology, also plays a role. So accordingly, we have differences in European countries, of course.
So are there countries in Europe that are more affected by drought events than other ones?
I think Europe is too big and too diverse climatically and physiographically to be able to make a general statement. Of course, there are countries, especially in southern or increasingly in Central Europe as well, who will increasingly suffer, who are and will increasingly suffer from dry summers, and they have more and more problems with agricultural drought. So they have more and more losses in the agricultural sector, but also the infrastructure is more and more affected. So, for example, lower water levels in rivers and lakes, which affects navigation, but which also has eco-hydrological impacts, for example, higher water temperatures or or higher pollutions in higher concentrations of pollutions in lakes and rivers, which may include higher ecological problems in the near future. But also countries which rely on electricity production through water power. So this is especially the alpine countries, the water-rich alpine or Nordic countries in Scandinavia, they might suffer as well from increasing drought.
Well, it sounds that the facts, of course, can appear really, really different depending from the country and also the infrastructure that is existing there. Are there already measures or ideas to deal with of being affected by droughts? If you can't monitor it, to prevent it in any other way?
I'm afraid I have to say that many countries are not well prepared for drought. By the way, the same was the case for the lacking preparedness for floods. But this attitude changed over the last, say, 20 or 30 years in many countries. However, some measures could easily be implemented. For example, the introduction of regulations specifying the use of water during dry periods. Countries that have known such regulations for a long time could serve as a blueprint, such as, for example, California or Spain. On the long run, other measures could be implemented. For example, water does not always have to reach the receiving water courses as quickly as possible. Here, as a result of drainage masses, major mistakes have been made in the past, for example, in the draining of wetlands. Leaving water in the landscape for as long as possible has a variety of ecological and also favorable climatic consequences. We should therefore follow the principle keeping water where it falls. This is, by the way, an identical principle which helps to reduce flood risk as well. Other measures could be, for example, to cultivate more drought-resistant crop varieties in agriculture. But let me conclude that in most cases, drought crises and drought disasters are the consequence of improper management of existing resources and often even mismanagement. The price of preparedness is minimal compared to the cost of disaster relief. Therefore, we should really shift from managing crises to preparing for droughts and other natural disasters and building resilience. What we need are plans and early warning systems, for example, based on remote sensing or the better monitoring of climate variabilities, for example, from El Nino or La Nina events.
One way on how we could prevent drought is to keep the water inside of wetlands, for example, as long as possible. Why should we do that, and what effects might it have to keep the water storage in wetlands as stable as possible?
If we keep water where it falls, so if we do not drain the water as fast as possible to the next water course, that means that soil moisture remains relatively high, so soils do not dry out faster when the soils are drained. So the soil moisture remains longer in the catchment, which has quite many effects. For example, it has even positive consequences for the climate, for the regional climatic conditions, for example, through higher evapotranspiration during dry phases. It's higher evapotranspiration, it's cooling the surface near atmosphere, which helps to prevent, to increase existing heat waves. So evapotranspiration has a cooling effect. And as long as water is soil, evapotranspiration can continue. And if we have more soil moisture in the catchment, so we have at the beginning of a drought, we have more possibility that the drought is not continuing in such intensity as it is with already relatively dry soils. And also keeping water where it falls has ecological effects. So if you have more wet surfaces, more wetlands preserved, then of course it has an ecological impact.
So seeing it that way, we can say that wetlands would work like magnetics towards water. Can you say it that way?
Yes, of course. If you preserve wetlands and if you preserve or prevent soils from artificial drainage, then it has a lot of positive consequences, not only hydrological, but also ecological, and at the end, also economical positive consequences.
Another question I would like to ask you is if there are countries or regions in Europe that will be especially affected, and are there any regions that once didn't have such problems, but now they do?
Of course, first of all, let me state that climate change will very likely to worsen drought-related problems. As mentioned already before, already relatively dry regions, such as those in southern or eastern, respectively southeastern Europe, might be more affected by droughts in the future. But even water-rich countries will more frequently be affected, such as, for example, Austria or Switzerland, but also the Scandinavian countries.
Oh, why the Scandinavian countries? How does it come that they might be also affected by droughts?
First of all, Scandinavian countries are, although they are quite water-rich, are also vulnerable against drought. So they have high precipitation rates, usually, such as Norway or major parts of Sweden or Finland. But on the other side, they rely very much on this water richness, for example, through electricity production from water power. So Scandinavian countries already had to suffer from droughts, not only from summer drought, that means higher temperatures during summer, which means higher evapotranspiration, so more water transferred to the atmosphere, but also droughts which develop during the winter. As you know, drought is not only a phenomenon which is restricted to summer, so including higher temperatures, but also can occur in winter. For example, imagine there is less snowpack during the winter, and snow is an element which retains a lot of water over months, for example, and slowly releases this water resources during spring and summer. And if there is not enough snowpack during winter, this region runs into a drought, especially if it is dependent on the water richness, as mentioned before.
Of course, when water is frozen, it can't be used in any way.
But when water is frozen, it cannot be used, but it is a storage. It is a storage of water. So when it is slowly melting, it is available gradually during springtime, during the melting season. So it's available during the rest of the year when it is not stored as ice and snow. And if it's not available then as snow melt, if there was just too few snowpack during the winter, then, of course, there is a lack of water.
So the problem is then that storage has been used up way too fast than it's usually in the past years, for example.
Okay. Let me also mention that especially in the future, in Alpine countries or in the Scandinavian countries, it is very likely that more rain is falling instead of snow. That means water is available, but during the winter months, when it is maybe not needed as much, and the storage of snow and ice is becoming much smaller. And this storage is very important to have a liquid water in the spring and in the summer when it is needed in the forelands of the mountains, for example. And if there is more liquid precipitation in the winter, so storage is slower, then you run into a problem.
So to note, we have talked a lot about droughts in general and their problems. Now, a question that goes in completely different direction. It is good and nice to know that droughts exist and will probably occur more frequently, but how do you measure a drought at all? So, which is the monitoring system? How does the monitoring system function at all?
Mm-hmm. Well, there are still many traditional measures of a drought, such as a precipitation deficit or an exceptional low flow in a river. The anomaly from the average can be determined statistically, for example, in number of standard deviations. Or we simply count the days below a predefined threshold value. It is also possible to calculate an accumulated flow deficit in rivers over a certain time. Nowadays, however, we have additional simulation tools which calculate the whole water balance of a region over many years. Droughts can then be recognized, for example, through an abnormal duration of low soil moisture values. Worldwide, there exist several drought monitor systems. For example, United States Drought Monitor or the European Drought Observatory. The latter combines an index describing rainfall deficit with an approach that delivers soil moisture anomaly. And this is again combined with remotely sensed data on the growth condition of the vegetation or on vegetation stress. And there are additional national drought monitors, such as the German Drought Monitor or the Swiss Monitor on Drought.
So do you know more about the European observation system? So how do they approach the drought monitoring?
Which observation system?
The European observation system.
As I mentioned before, the European Drought Observatory, it combines observations that is mainly, of course, precipitation. Mm-hmm. And the precipitation is then transformed into an index, the standard precipitation index. It's roughly saying it's an index based on statistical methods, which describes the deviation of actual precipitation from mean conditions. And this approach is then combined again with simulations, with simulated soil moisture, so based on water balance models. And again, this is combined with remotely sensed information. So really a combination of different measures, direct measurements, simulations, and remote sensing. And the remote sensing of the growth condition of the vegetation is, for example, based on the light absorbance capacity of the vegetation. So if vegetation is under stress, you can see this on the remotely sensed pictures.
Okay, now I got it. Thank you. Where could we get access to that observation, to the European observation system? Do they publish the collected data on a website, or is it not public accessible? Do you know that?
I can give you an example from our own research results. I mentioned the DRYER project already. Mm-hmm. Our results are first regularly published as articles, of course, in scientific journals. But on the other side, there are, of course, web pages, for example, of the DRYER project. DRYER is spelled D-R-I-E-R. So really coming from DRYER, and you will find the DRYER project web page very easily on Google. You can find some basic information about droughts. For example, we are also currently compiling short, that means two-page, and hopefully well-understandable summaries of our work. And you will find these summaries soon on our web page. If you are interested in more, you could, for example, visit the web page about the European Drought Observatory, from where really interesting material can be downloaded.
Okay, that's great. I'm sure that all all our GIS and remote sensing students from geography, geoscience, say they will be excited to take a look at it. Really, really great, really, really useful. However, finally, maybe we should get out of our university bubble and get into daily life. With my question, if there are any possibilities for us in our daily life to reduce the risk of droughts, or in other words, do we need political measures to make a difference? What we can we do on a daily basis?
In general, I would say it's always a good idea to raise awareness for special risks such as from climate variability and climate change, to which drought and floods belong, of course. Raising awareness with regards to potential risk is therefore always a good idea. With regards to flood risk, for example, there exist some options for the potentially affected population to better deal with high water levels and how they can better protect, for example, through adaptive measures in houses. But unfortunately for droughts, I do not see any possibilities to change our daily lifestyle in order to reduce drought risk or to alleviate potential destructions from droughts. Of course, if droughts become more frequent through warmer summers, then of course we can do something through adaptation to climate change, and of course to reduce climate change through reduction of CO2 emissions. That's clear. But if we look especially at droughts, it's really complicated for the every single person to try to do something to fight droughts. I mentioned already that we should work in also in the context that the water should be kept in the catchment. So in this sense, we could do something that we engage in decisions, in land use decisions, for example. Of course, this is a very complicated process, but we should try to do so. But with regards to droughts, I see mostly political measures to better adapt to droughts.
What could be the political measures, like laws and rules to control certain areas or even regions, like they have done in California to control the water usage?
So developing plans in advance of what happens with water during a drought is always a good idea. So if a crisis appears and we are not prepared, that's the worst case. And it still happens with regards to droughts. So developing plans, adaptation measures, increasing resilience is the most important political measure I can see. But of course, as I mentioned before, these non-conventional measures, I would call them, that is to combine hydrological measures with ecological measures. So keeping water where it falls, adapting land use to changing conditions of climate variability and with regards to drought is an important measure I can see as well.
Okay. Is there some kind of approach to prepare ecosystems to regain water storage? What can we do about already affected ecosystems that are partly or completely damaged?
That's a general question, I would say. What can we do with already damaged ecosystem? And this goes far beyond the drought question. Of course, we should try to reactivate damaged ecosystems in any case, which has many effects, even side effects, as I mentioned before. If we have more wetlands, if we restore wetlands that has, for example, a positive regional climate effect through more water in the system, through higher evapotranspiration, which helps to cool the climate conditions of the region. So in any case, and as I said before, this goes far beyond the drought question. We should try everything to restore previous ecosystems in our catchments.
So I would like to ask you a point about the raising awareness about droughts. Which kind of work would we need to raise the awareness? Would you need more educational work, or should we just let it to the research institutes and hand it over to the media, which will prepare it in any other way? What are your thoughts about that?
Okay, as I mentioned before, in many European countries, focus has been on the other hydrological extreme, that is floods. And awareness on droughts is still quite very low. This is because droughts were little considered over the past because they were not so frequent and the damages, especially in Europe, were not so high. Thus, no knowledge was gathered about the specific conditions for the generation of a drought and the processes during drought development. Rising awareness is very complex, and it should include not only the politics, but also the affected population from the very beginning. And we have many experiences from floods, how we found to, in which manner we found to increase flood perception, flood awareness in the affected, possibly affected population. And that's, I think, a very important action to do, that we talk more about droughts, how droughts develop, and what everybody could do or could contribute to avoid the adverse impacts of droughts. For example, through water saving measures, to understand future rules to reduce water wastage, for example, to reduce water use during a drought events, to maybe to restrict washing cars during droughts, or to avoid, generally speaking, unnecessary water losses.
So in a nutshell, let's say it that way, we can only raise awareness by rules, for example, to control the own household water usage, and then to support research work about droughts and how to prevent them. Okay.
Yes, I would say so, yes.
Well, this was the official part of the interview. I would like to ask you two last questions regarding further information and what you are currently reading. So if some of the listeners are now thinking, wow, that's really interesting, do you have some more tips on how to continue with the topic? For example, where can we keep up to date with your research?
Yeah, as I mentioned before, there are, if you type in drought, for example, on Google or on Google Scholar, then you will find many scientific articles, but also you should have a look on web pages, for example, on the European Drought Observatory or on the US Drought Monitor, which use different methods to monitor the droughts. And they, at least for the European Drought Observatory, they have quite a lot of interesting material which can be used by students, which is well understandable, and which helps you to better understand a drought and all the different factors combined which cause a drought.
So, and for your research work especially, we can stay up to date by your website from the University of Heidelberg. So, in general, subject of course, the European Observation System, and for your research work, especially for at the University of Heidelberg, this web page.
Yes, the TRIOP project, sorry to interrupt you. the TRIOP project is a project which is settled at different universities in Southwest Germany. Not only Heidelberg University is included, but also the University of Freiburg, Tübingen University. So different disciplines work together. And you can find, when you Google for the Dreyer project, and for example, Heidelberg University or University of Freiburg or Tübingen, you will find specific information on what the different groups do. For example, what the colleagues from the vegetation ecology contribute to the Dreyer research, or the from forestry, the hydrologists, but also the people from law. So they investigated the different situation of the regulations, law regulations in different countries, how the different countries politically deal with droughts. And they found that, for example, California and Spain, they have very well elaborated systems how to deal with droughts, in contrast to Germany, for example. So you will find especially also information from different disciplines, not only from hydrology or climatology.
Well, that Dreyer network, that's a good point, because some EGA entities might be in these cities, so other EGAs can have an access to that research network.
www.dreyer.uni-freiburg.de. So this is the major web page of the Dreyer project, which then contributes to the different work packages or partners in the different universities.
Okay, that's perfect. Thank you very much. So we get to our last question we pose every guest we have at that podcast. So what are you currently reading, if I may ask you?
Okay, apart from scientific publications, you mean, I guess at least. Usually I always read several books at the same time, which can take a long time until I have finished the book. But let me select one of the different books. I think currently it's three books I read in parallel.
Okay, which of these three books would you recommend?
I would like to mention the book by Erling Kagge called Silence. It is meant to help you find moments of silence, even in crowded trains, at an airport, or on a busy street. And I think silence and stillness are one of the most precious resources today. That's why I selected this book. And I hope it can help me to find more silence, even, as I said before, in a crowded environment.
That's cool. So you are developing more in the direction of self-awareness. I mean, in this pandemic, it was amazing to see how in March everything literally stopped. It was like the world didn't move. And I can imagine that you and also many other people had a lot of difficulties to deal with these strange pictures, and also the strange pictures of the empty cities, and also, yeah, there's a silence when there weren't any planes or even cars.
Yes, this is kind of artificial silence. So I think I just started to read this book, Silence, when the pandemic with the first pandemic situation was taking place. That's why I found a bit more silence in a busy environment, because the environment became less busy. But still, it's very helpful to read such a book for coming times, I think.
I also mean having silence around you can develop some space within you. And I think that's something many people trouble with, to create space in oneself and outside to just be and to create something, stories, science, to get epiphanies, great ideas on how you could proceed with your research work. Yeah, and also to create some calmness, seeing it that way. I haven't noted it on my sketch, which kind of books. Is there also a scientific book you could recommend?
Oh, that's very difficult. I'm working to read so many scientific articles and books. And of course, there are books on droughts. It's hard to recommend. I think it is up to you in which topic you are interested. If you are interested in climate change and impact of climate change through droughts, floods, other disasters, but also ecological consequences and so on. And if you understand German, then I can recommend a book from Springer. It's called Der Klimawandel in Deutschland, or Klimawandel in Deutschland. And it's a collection of very short articles, mostly for the public, so well understandable, about climate change impacts in Germany. This is valid for neighboring countries as well, of course. So easy, understandable conclusions from different aspects, how climate change affects different parts of our environment.
Maybe it has been already translated into other languages. Can you name the author?
Yeah, it's a collection of many different authors. I think 40 different authors, but the main author is Guy Brasseur, Daniela Jacob, and Susanne Schuck-Zöller. So these three persons, they are the chief editors, but as I mentioned before, I think at least 40 different authors contribute to this book. I'm not sure if it's translated already into English.
Maybe you can also tell a book that is available on English.
Okay, there's another book which was originally written in German and which was translated afterwards in English. The German title was Warnsignal Klima, Genug Wasser für alle.
Okay.
And it was just translated to English, Climate Change, Enough Water for All. And it's again a collection of different short articles from a variety of authors from different disciplines who deal with water problems from different scientific views, from different disciplines. So how does climate change affect the water sector with regard to droughts, to floods, to occurrence of wildfires, water pollution, and all these aspects are concluded in this book. And this book is freely available, by the way, as a PDF. So if you just type in Google, climate change, enough water for all, then you will for sure find it. You can download the individual chapters of this book.
Thank you very much. So now we are really done. We want to thank you much for the interview.
Thank you as well. Thank you very much.
In this episode, we have learned that there are different forms of droughts and measurement indices. However, most European countries were not prepared for droughts and are therefore struggling. Even water-rich countries are affected because snow masses won't recover. The instead fallen rain can't be used effectively either. Beside the research project Dryer, there is also the European Drought Observatory, providing data and information about droughts in Europe. In the long run, political regulations can prevent further damages. I hope you enjoyed this episode of IGEA Podcast. If you have any questions, comments or ideas, please feel free to write us via podcast@aegea.eu. If you are an Aegean, you are very welcome to join our team. And with this, hear you somewhere in Europe.